There are 5 times more hires made through Indeed.com than any other job site. Imagine a lottery that had 5 times more winners. A Sunday with 5 times more touchdowns. When you're hiring, it makes 5 times more sense to use Indeed. Right now, we're giving new users a $50 credit to post a sponsored job on the world's number one job site. Claim your $50 credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
We've got 40 degrees, mostly cloudy and breezy. How about the wind out of the southeast at 20 miles per hour? Eric Nelson with you. Sports Saturday rolls on. Bonus edition this week. Normally Esme would be on now, but because the Wolves are playing the Spurs, we'll keep it in the sports mode here until 7:30. That's pregame. John Folkey, tip-off 8 o'clock. Alan Horton from Texas, Minnesota, and San Antonio. Big ball game for the Wolves. Of course, the Spurs have beaten the Timberwolves 9 straight times, so Minnesota overdue to knock off Greg Popovich's team. J-Lo Jonathan Lowe is our studio coordinator, and in the newsroom, we've got Sloan Martin. Well, right now we're going to talk to Joe Gagnon, and he is going to try to do something that nobody else has ever done. Beginning on April 10th, Joe will attempt to run 6 consecutive marathons on 6 continents in just 6 days. It all begins down under in Sydney, Australia, and if all goes well, it'll be day 2 in Singapore, day 3 in Johannesburg, day 4 London, day 5 Sao Paulo, day 6 to wrap it up in Los Angeles. Joe, how you doing?
Excellent. How are you, Eric?
Good, good. I got tired just describing your itinerary. Let's start from the top. Where did you come up with this idea?
You know, each year I was trying to figure out a bigger, different challenge to sort of, you know, find the outer limits of what's possible. And this one is, you know, just one of those that seem, I travel a lot around the world for work and I love to run, and it seemed like the two intersected well, and took me a few months to figure it out. And that inspiration turned into reality, and I have 5 weeks to go and we'll see what happens.
Have you been able to wrap your arms around this thing? 157 miles of running, 40,000 air miles. And this is all going to happen at warp speed, but for you, it's going to be a challenge. You're going to have to stay hydrated, rested, and you're going to have energy. Have you been able to wrap your arms around it?
You know, it's a great question. You know, you'll never know fully if you're always prepared. I have been running a lot so far, you know, over the past few years, certainly about 25,000 miles over the past 10, a lot of 4,000-mile years recently. I do fly a lot, about 300,000 miles a year. So I feel like parts of it are known. The parts that are unknown is, how does it feel sitting in a coach seat day 3 or day 4, flying 12 hours in between after you just ran? I think that the piece that'll sort of also be unpredictable is, you know, different weather, different temperate zones, changing time zones, nutrition. It's a lot of complicated elements, but I'm sort of curious to see what it's going to be like as much as I am prepared.
Yeah, and you brought up time zones. Certainly that's going to be a huge factor. We all know that the airline industry does not give you a whole lot to eat and drink anymore up there 34,000 feet above Omaha, so you're going to have to bring your own food, I'm assuming, on the jet. And then you have the possibility of things out of your control. There could be weather delays. There could be mechanical issues with the airplanes. How does that all factor in?
Yeah, it's a little bit of the risk profile. So what I did was have to make sure that each of the legs was a direct flight, no connections. So that did take some planning. You know, you got to get through customs and immigration as well. Having a U.S. passport actually helps a lot, since I've been through most of these airports before. I'm a vegetarian, so it brings a little bit of complexity. So I have to really think about what I eat. And on the airplanes, I'll have, you know, Clif bars and some other energy food with me, so I always have something. I'm not going to sleep flat for the 6 days, you know, just it's sort of like sitting or standing for that period of time. You know, every one of these challenges, if there isn't some risk, then, you know, it's sort of a little bit, why bother? So the parts I control, I'm going to work really hard on being ready, and the other parts, we'll just sort of, we'll say our prayers, so to speak, you know?
All right, so break this down. You'll start in Sydney, and I'll make the assumption that that's the one that you'll definitely finish. That's marathon number one. Then you got to get to the airport in Sydney, Australia, and go to Singapore. So when you get to Singapore, are you traveling with a crew? Do you get a rental car and find a spot to run? Is there a designated place where this marathon's going to happen? Who documents it? Break all that down.
Yeah, so it's a great question. So it's the marathon distance. Almost all of these challenges don't include a real race because no one races during the week. So while I've run 27 formal marathons, these six will be the distance of 26.2 miles or 42 kilometers. Each of the routes I have mapped out with a local bunch of friends of mine, so to speak. But I would be traveling alone. Adds to a little bit of the challenge just with the backpack. You know, when I get off the plane in Singapore, I'll eat some breakfast. It'll be hot, you know, so that's one of the things. For example, I was actually in Singapore 10 days ago, and it's 90 degrees and 70% humidity, and I'm going to start from right around the marina, head around this massive casino image that everyone sees from Singapore, and then run along the beach back towards the airport, come back around, finish up. I'm estimating, you know, 4 to 4.5 hours per marathon, which is slower than my normal marathon speed. But to make sure that I'm okay, I will have some people meet me somewhere along the path to give me some water and some food. And then, you know, you just get back, and then I will. Another part of this is trying to meet up with some youth ambassadors that I have as part of a group I'm part of called chimein.org. And we'll talk about, you know, sort of the purpose behind this is this idea that we can do more than we think we can. And that by demonstrating that you can take on these crazy challenges, others might think that, maybe I can do more than I ever thought possible if I see this as an example of that. And then head back to the airport and head to Johannesburg.
Our guest is the marathon man, Joe Gagnon, again, beginning April 10th in Sydney, Australia. Joe will try to run six consecutive marathons on six continents in just 6 days, a remarkable goal he has set for himself. And, Joe, how'd you come up with the various cities that you chose? Obviously, there's a lot of options out there. Why this a group of six?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. One of the primary reasons, starting in Sydney was sort of, you know, iconic. Start at the Sydney Harbour Bridge, run around the Opera House, out to Centennial Park. I always knew that I wanted to start in Australia because it's just so vivid and beautiful. From there, it was, where can you fly directly to get to the next continent? And so in each place, you needed to have a direct flight. It had to be 12 hours or under. It had to face west so that I got a little bit of time zone advantage. So Singapore wasn't bad. I could have gone to India. Could have gone somewhere in Indonesia, but Singapore is easy to speak English. It's easy to get from the airport to downtown. So then each time you put a sort of a pin in the map, then the next location was to sort of use those criteria. Johannesburg, there are not a lot of places you can really go into Africa. You could go Egypt, Morocco, Johannesburg. Really was the flight that drove it and some relationships I have there. Then from there, you know, Europe was actually much more flexible. You could go to Spain or you could go to France. But I have a lot of good friends up in London, and I've been there 20 times. And I sort of knew I wanted to run around something iconic like the Winchester Castle, which is what I'm going to get to do. From there to South America, it was either, you know, Rio, Sao Paulo, had to be a major city. Again, you need sort of a bit of the infrastructure, the long flight, and the head of someone that I knew who could count on for to pick me up and take me around. And finishing in L.A. was, it was either Miami or L.A., and I just feel like running along the beach of Venice to sort of end up in Santa Monica was just another iconic setting. So you have all these different elements that you put together, and it took a while actually, and then it all fell in place. And you know, one day I just went and booked all those tickets, and I was like, oh, wow, better get ready.
Yeah, so you've already paid the freight, so you're committed to this. Sure. We know about the airlines. If you try to make a change on a flight, good luck. You're going to get docked a lot of money. So this is going to be interesting, Joe. We certainly wish you nothing but success. And I like your strategy. So each flight, you're going toward the west to gain time. That'll get you just a little bit more rest, won't it?
Yes, it will. And, you know, we all know what it's like to sleep sitting up, right? I mean, so it's not the most optimal situation. My hope is 3 to 4 hours of the time that I'm on that flight that I fall asleep. I know that probably by day 3 or 4, my legs will feel a little bit crummy, you know. But, you know, when people ask me about it, I always say, listen, I am just intently curious about what it's going to feel like on day 4 or 5. I'm actually almost looking forward to a little bit of the misery, because I think sometimes in our lives we push towards the middle too much and stay away from things that make us feel. And I'm just like crazy interested in the experience, the people, this sort of like the unpredictability of it. And that's just like what's going to happen as each of these go on. And you know, we're all going to just say that it'll work. And of course, you know, that's what you believe at the end. Wow, what a feeling that will be. I can't wait to get there.
Yeah, and you hear this phrase often from people who, you know, work out, train, things like that. Embrace the grind. It sounds to me like you're going to embrace the grind here, and you're going to, you know, absolutely immerse yourself in the moment, and probably will, even though you'll be dead tired, you'll never feel more alive in any other stage of your life.
I think, Eric, you're 100% right on, and it's what I would love more people in the world to think about. You know, we know the world is sort of a little bit wobbly right now. We're both stronger together, and we're stronger with sort of images of embracing and success. And, you know, an ultra marathoner once said to me, you know, let pain come to you. Like, don't be afraid of it. It's going to be okay. You know, really, that Sunday after, when I'm sitting somewhere in Los Angeles and it's all over, it'll be like, you know, wow. And I think that having done a bunch of this in my life, it is sort of remarkable. We're given permission by being alive to go do things. And we need to go do them. We can't just sort of wait for others. And that's what this – so, yeah, maybe a little bit of discomfort, but that's okay, right? That's how we find out what life is really about.
Yeah, no question. What's been the feedback, the blowback, if you will, from friends and family? And I ask this because I once read a book, Joe, called Mississippi Solo, about a guy who grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, right by the Mississippi River, and he always wondered what it would be like to canoe it from northern Minnesota to Louisiana, and he'd never been in a boat in his life, and all his friends tried to talk him out of it. And he finally went to the person that he viewed as his mentor, and he said, well, you know, they're either jealous or concerned for you. Well, he went ahead and did the trip, and he went all the way down the Mississippi by himself. It was a great book, Mississippi Solo. Eddie L. Harris wrote the book. What are you hearing? You've got to be hearing from people who are saying, Joe, what are you doing?
Yeah, no question about it. You know, you get the few who say, wow, amazing, love the idea. Most say, you know, that's really not safe. Why are you doing that? It's too hard. You know, have you realized, you know? And I often, there's two things I do. One is I say, thanks, appreciate your point of view. Mostly ignore it. I'm respectful of what they think. Sort of always a little bit sad that they don't realize that we can all achieve whatever we want to. But, you know, if we're going to achieve a lot, you know, whether it be Lewis and Clark or a trip around the Mississippi, down the Mississippi, you know, to achieve a lot in this world, some of us have to just take that extra step, push a little farther. And to do that, you sort of have to ignore convention a little bit. You have to sort of say to others, it's okay. It really is okay. That this is how I think, you know, we've come a great world over time with not just me running marathons. Other great accomplishments started with people making decisions that seemed counter to the intuition of the time. I know for sure the body is more resilient than we realize, and the mind is strong enough to get us there. And others have not done this for themselves, so they find it odd, dangerous, whatever words they might use. I actually think it's very managed and very doable.
And again, nobody's ever done this, right?
In the way that I have, no. Not the way that the direction, the cities, locations, by myself. It's a unique experience that I'm setting out to do. There are lots of people who take on fantastic challenges, you know, running across the Sahara Desert or a marathon on Antarctica. We have a lot of modern-day explorers who are out doing really great things. And I think the fun part about doing it sort of in a sporting way is that it's easy to connect the metaphor to the rest of life. Sometimes we do things and the significance isn't realized because it's hard to measure. And this is very easy to sort of grasp and say, wow. You know, the distance is sort of doable, the locations maybe over time, but to compress all the elements and then to do it with a backpack on your back and a plane ticket, you know, it's just a compounding effect to feel, you know, really special.
Yeah, and it's obvious you have prepped up big time for this. You've done your homework. Of all these six cities, different continents, Sydney, Singapore, Johannesburg, London, Sao Paulo, Los Angeles, factoring in weather, topography, you know, flat versus elevation, things like that, which one do you think will be the most difficult? Which one do you look at and say, all right, this is the one where I better be on my game?
I think it's going to be in running around Winchester Castle in England. It's quite hilly. It'll be day four. It'll have started to be tiring, and you still got a bit of ways to go. I think it'll be the hilliest course of all, and that just takes more out of you. And so I think that one's the one that I'm going to sort of need that little bit of, you know, juice to get myself through. And I always, you know, having done these, you know, there's that sort of doubt in the middle that will come. And you always say to yourself, you know, no matter how I feel right now, it'll change soon enough. So that's good to bad and bad to good. And, you know, you get that experience and you don't feel good, but you do have confidence. And so I think that'll be the hard one.
It's funny you say the London run, because I would think, based on at least the weather there for a lot of the year, cooler, damp, foggy, that would seem to be conducive to what you're doing. But, yeah, you're right. Throw in hills, and that's a game changer.
Yeah, and I think it will probably – my guess, right, you know, it would be great if it doesn't rain anywhere. It's a high probability it'll be raining that day. And so add in a little bit of cold rain, and, you know, it'll probably be perfect for sort of what you try to accomplish. You know, throw a few more things at me, and I'll make it through no matter what.
All right. Well, hey, it's great stuff that you're trying to do, Joe. We wish you nothing but success. And hopefully we'll be talking to you in about 5 weeks after you've accomplished this feat, and we'll get all the details.
I would love to do that, Eric. I really appreciate you showing some attention, and we'll make sure we get to success and talk to you on the other side.
All right, very good. He's the marathon man, Joe Gagnon, literally a globetrotter. On April 10th, going to set out in Sydney, Australia, try to run six marathons, six continents in six consecutive days. Sydney, Singapore, Johannesburg, London, Sao Paulo, Los Angeles. Pretty good stuff there, J-Lo. I mean, there's always been some things that, you know, through time that you look at what people have done and they push themselves to the limits. But if this guy pulls this off, and why doubt him? He sounds confident. This is going to rank up there near the top for me.
I mean, there are a lot of people out there. There are people that run marathons for a living. They are distance runners. They are endurance runners. They run marathons. They do triathlons. They do the super marathons, the 100-mile marathons. And they do this over and over again. But they usually train for however long that they need to do this. And I know he's trained a lot for it, but usually you have time off between races. It's not like the NFL where
you decompress.
Yeah, where you got a race in Boston on Sunday, and then, you know, the next Sunday you got to fly to St. Louis for a race, and, you know, it's a road game, you know, that sort of thing. So to do this over a 6-day period, that's mind-boggling to me. I can't imagine what your body is going to feel like after all of this is done.
It's It's hard to fathom, but he does have a stamina resume. Joe Gagnon has run 27 marathons, 10 ultramarathons, 6 Ironman triathlons, a total of over 125,000 miles of running and biking in the last 10 years. So I am looking forward to having him on again in 5,
absolutely.
6, 7
weeks.
Absolutely.
I'd love to hear the after interview of all. And I don't know, I was in and out of the interview. Did you ask him how he's going to pace himself, like, during the race? Is he going to, because being a marathon runner that he is, you're usually looking to get the fastest time. Is he trying to go fast and get things done?
He expects to run 4-hour marathons, which is slower than normal. But
right.
And
to try to preserve
sense.
Energy.
Right. Yeah. He's not out to set records. He's really not competing with anyone. This is just to say that he was able to do it. So I think this thing will garner a lot of attention as it gets going. And, again, it all starts in Sydney, Australia. Just the travel itinerary alone has me excited. Sydney, Singapore, Johannesburg, London, Sao Paulo, and finally in Los Angeles.
That's a vacation for some people with wealth.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just a month-long vacation.
Well, he's already bought the tickets, so he's stuck now because the airlines, they have no wiggle room when it comes to making changes. I mean, they dock you a lot of money. So it'll be fun to see how this plays out. We'll talk to Matthew Hatchett in a few minutes, former Minnesota Vikings wideout. We'll talk about the Purple, their decision to cut cords and ties with Adrian Peterson, and all sorts of NFL stuff. There was a combine record set today in the 40-yard dash, 4.2. seconds, by a gentleman from the University of Washington. His name is John Ross. 4.22 warp speed. 6:29 here on WCCO.
Over 3 million businesses use Indeed.com for hiring. 5 times more hires are made through Indeed than any other job site. By creating the easiest, most effective hiring experience, we help businesses find great new people every day. Right now, we're giving new users a $50 credit to post a sponsored job on the world's number one job site. Claim your $50 credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Love listening to your favorite stations online? Download the Radio.com app to get on-the-go access to hundreds of HD radio stations, award-winning podcasts, and top entertainment and music articles. Go to apps.radio.com for more information or download today from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Listen to CBS Sports Radio every weekend for nonstop sports updates and breaking news, including analysis of the hottest topics in sports.
CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports Radio.
Listen live every weekend on air or online at CBSSportsRadio.com.
9 degrees on the gigantic thermometer here in the WCCO studios. Boy, it is spacious and luxurious in this building downtown Minneapolis on a Saturday night. Eric Nelson with you here until 7:30. 6:33 right now on the clock. Normally Esme would be on in this time slot, but of course we've got Timberwolves basketball coming up tonight against San Antonio, deep in the heart of Texas. Pregame 7:30 and tip-off 8 o'clock. John Folkey, Alan Horton, and the entire Timberwolves radio network will give you all the information you possibly need to know on this game, and it's a big one between the Wolves and the Spurs. Well, a soccer franchise was born last night in Portland, Oregon, Minnesota United FC. It was the birth of Min U. Didn't go too well, kind of a rough delivery, as they would say in the doctor's room. Portland Timbers 5, Minnesota United 1. The Loons lose the game after giving up 4 second-half goals. Fernando Adi and Diego Valeri each had 2 goals for the Timbers. Christian Ramirez scored the first ever goal in Min U history. He, of course, had been playing with the team at the NASL level. Very good player. 6 of the Loons starters, and there's 11 on the pitch when the game began, were playing in their first ever MLS match. So a lot of folks, the so-called soccer experts, are saying that Minnesota is going to have a rough season as an expansion team. Atlanta United FC also coming into the MLS this season. They're up to 22 teams. By the way, each Major League Soccer club will play 34 games, 17 at home, 17 away. Minnesota's home opener a week from tomorrow at TCF Bank Stadium on the U of M campus. That is their temporary home until the new soccer-specific venue opens up in the St. Paul Midway, probably in 2 years. Atlanta will be the opposition. 4 o'clock is when the match starts, and I think they may have 30 to 35,000 fans. I think there will be a buzz. Of course, weather may be a bit of a factor, but one thing about Minnesota United, they are going to play in any conditions. They will start in March and into the late fall, maybe early winter if they make a playoff run, and they are embracing the elements here in the Twin Cities. And my goodness, you never know what the weather's going to be like in this part of the world. Right now, rather tranquil, 39 degrees, going to get up to 60 tomorrow and Monday. So another hint of spring as we get deeper into March. Another sign of spring, besides those robins chirping in your backyard, is the high school boys hockey tournament. Boy, this is certainly one of the outstanding state prep tournaments in the country. Ranks right up there with Indiana basketball, Texas football, where they have like 6 classes. It's ridiculous what they have down in Texas for football. But high school hockey, obviously here in Minnesota, big deal. Class A quarterfinals begin Wednesday at the XL Energy Center in St. Paul. Second-ranked Delano will play Monticello Annandale Maple Lake at 11 a.m. Third seed Matamidi against Northfield. That's a 1 p.m. faceoff. Top seed Hermantown defending champion Hawks will take on Laverne. 6 p.m. the puck drops. And then at 8 o'clock, number 4 seed East Grand Forks against 5th seed St. Cloud Cathedral. Class 2A quarterfinals begin on Thursday. Second seed St. Thomas Academy against Lakeville South, 11 a.m. 3 seed Moorhead against Hillmurray at 1. Top seed Eden Prairie against Wayzata at 6. And by the way, the Wayzata Trojans, a record of 10 wins, 17 losses, 1 tie, but they were able to beat Edina and get into the state tournament. 4 seed Maple Grove will take on 5 seed Grand Rapids. That'll be at 8 o'clock on Thursday. So let all the fun, let all the pomp and circumstance begin on Wednesday at the X. And if you haven't ever seen the state high school hockey tournament, go out and give it a look. It's worth it. It is just pure hockey. It's pure sport. It's stayed true throughout all these years. It hasn't really gotten too commercial, and it's a good deal. So speaking of hockey, the Minnesota Wild will be playing at the X tomorrow at 5 p.m. against San Jose. And this game is a pretty good regular season matchup. Sharks, 83 points. They went to the Cup Finals last season, losing to Pittsburgh. Minnesota, 88 points. Nobody has more in the Western Conference. And what a year Mikael Granlund is having for the Wild with 59 points. That leads the team, 21 goals, 31 assists. Meanwhile, former Wild defenseman Brent Burns continues to excel for the Sharks. He has 67 points to lead them, 27 goals and 40 assists on the season. The Wild lost a tough one to Columbus on Thursday. They won in Winnipeg on Tuesday. They beat the Los Angeles Kings on Monday night. I was at that game at the XL Energy Center in St. Paul. And I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this. The game went to overtime, right? I admit it, I like the Kings. I wanted to go see the Kings play. They needed the game, even though the Wild won it. But so it's 4-4 after regulation. I decide I'm going to leave the press box and go down to the lower level and watch the overtime and then get out of the building as soon as the game ends, so I can beat some of that St. Paul traffic. So, third period ends, Kings 4, Wild 4. I go to the elevator. I get in the elevator. Takes me just a few seconds to go down to the lower level, main concourse. I get out, and all of a sudden all I hear is a loud horn and a lot of cheers. And Granlund had won the game 12 seconds into overtime. You talk about ending something quickly. That's what Mikael Granlund did. He went coast to coast, knifing through a couple of Wild Kings defenders, and he put the puck past Jonathan Quick, and the Wild won in dramatic fashion on Monday night over the LA Kings 5-4. It's always good when you can win a game without ever having the lead in regulation, and that was the case on Monday. Kings led 1-0. Wild tied at 1-1. Kings led 2-1. Wild tied at 2-2. Kings led 3-2. Wild tied at 3-3. Kings led 4-3. Wild tied at 4-4. And then they got the game winner in the OT. So the Wild and the Sharks tomorrow in St. Paul. And that should be a good hockey game. And maybe a playoff preview. Two teams that right now are heavyweights in the Western Conference. Also want to give a salute to our good friend Dick Jonkowski, who was the longtime voice of the Barn. 31 seasons doing public address work for Golden Gopher men's basketball. Still does baseball. And Dickie J, one of the great characters here in the Twin Cities. And he's had a long run. But now he's done after 31 seasons calling Gopher basketball at the Barn. And nobody had more fun doing that job, I think, than Dick Jonkowski. And he travels around the country, parts of Canada, doing a lot of speaking engagements, and he can be a cut-up. Dickie J's got a lot of jokes he likes to tell. hey, congrats on a tremendous run for the U of M. Speaking of the Gophers, they will be in action tomorrow in Madison, taking on the Wisconsin Badgers' final Big Ten regular season game. Gophers 23-7, 11-6 in the conference. Wisconsin 22-8, 11-6 in the conference as well. Badgers are ranked, I believe, 22nd one poll, 23rd another. But they've been taking a dip as of late. Minnesota, meanwhile, is surging. Gophers have won 8 straight games. But can they win a game in Madison? It's been a while. Whether it's football or basketball, Minnesota struggles in Madtown. But if they get the victory, J-Lo, Gophers will get a number 2 seed next week's Big Ten tournament in D.C., and they're going to get a double bye regardless. But
yes,
just an incredible turnaround for this program, because where they were a year ago, 8 wins overall, well documented, historically bad, and now you're looking at a team that's trending up at just the right time.
Well, you got to give, I think, of course, Richard Pitino is the guy that the architect behind this. I think you really have to give a lot of credit to the young roster, especially the freshman that came in, a guy like Amir Coffey that came in. Now, Reggie Lynch, is he a freshman? I know he's new to the team, or at least I didn't hear a lot about him last year. Now, again, I go in and out on the Gophers, so you can take that as you will. But Reggie Lynch has been a big key factor inside.
He had 11 blocks in a game a week ago against Penn State.
This is something that the Gophers didn't have the last couple of seasons, was a big-time interior presence, especially defensively. And so you add those two pieces to guys like Nate Mason and some other guys that are on the team and came into the team over the last couple of seasons.
Reggie's a junior, by the way.
Okay. And so you add all that together, and it's been a recipe for success. Now, the skeptical part of me, and again, I apologize for this, Gopher fans, part of it to me is that the Big Ten is not as strong as it has been in the last few years this season. Wisconsin is not as strong, kind of disappointingly, because they have a lot of their cast back, Bronson Koenig and Nigel Hayes and all those guys, Ethan Happ, those guys are still there. Michigan State had some turnover this year. They are not as strong. Purdue is a really strong team, and the Gophers' win at Purdue was, I think, really the biggest game changer of the season. Now, they had some nice wins in the non-conference. They beat a couple of teams that are in the running for their conference tournaments in the smaller leagues, but they had a win over Arkansas, who's a possibility. I think they're on the right side of the quote-unquote bubble to get into the tournament. I think they're in. Vanderbilt, who got a big win over Florida today to help their cause, they could be in the tournament as well. We may have more information on just what happened in the day in college basketball a little bit later on in the program. But getting those wins was nice. But going on the road and getting a win at a legitimate top 15 team like Purdue, or top 20 team, I guess I should say, that was a big step in the right direction for the Gophers and their direction of turning that last season around to the success of this season. So yeah, I think the players get a lot of credit for learning on the fly and growing on the fly and getting in a position to win some of these bigger ball games and get to 11-6 in the conference going into tomorrow.
Yeah, and they've won 8 in a row. So kudos to the Gophers. And Nate Mason certainly has elevated his game. Well, you look at his numbers, 15.4 points per game average, 5.3 assists per game average. Amir Coffey, instant impact, instant coffee as a freshman for Amir.
Oh, that's good.
You like that?
Instant coffee.
Yeah.
I like that.
12 points per game average, almost 4 rebounds per game, almost 3.5 assists per game. So he's come out of the gate flying, and that was a big deal for Richard Pitino to be able to get Amir Coffey and then keep him here because, remember, last couple of years, there was a lot of stuff swirling around this program, and a lot of us wondered. We even had his dad, Richard, on many times, and we said, is he going to stay committed to Minnesota? Is he going to decommit? And, you know, give the kid credit. He stuck to his guns. Of course, his dad was a star here back in the day, but it's working out well. So this is a fun story, and it's long overdue. And we'll see what they can do in the tournament.
And don't forget that there's some off the court issues as well at the end of last season.
Yes.
So that is something that people don't. This season, with the success on the court, the non issues off the court, no one's heard a peep of any sort of indiscretion off the court. That sort of pushes that whole scandalous behavior late last season to the back burner, and for good reason. Just one other thing you might want to mention. Now, you talked about Minnesota not being able to win in Madison with a couple of their big teams, the football team, the men's basketball team. Don't forget about women's hockey. Women's hockey has been doing very well. And they're actually playing right now in the WCHA turn and in their what they're calling the Frozen Face-Off, their Final Four of the women's tournament. Wisconsin won earlier today. Over at Ritter Arena, they beat North Dakota 2-1, and currently at the start of the third period, the Gopher women's team is tied with Minnesota Duluth at 1. So hopefully we may see another Gopher-Badger matchup tomorrow in the final, but we'll keep you posted on that as best we can.
Yeah, that definitely would be a lot of fun. Gophers-Badger is always entertaining, no matter if it's on the ice, the hardwood, or the gridiron. Don't forget, you got the Dairy Queen Classic, too, this weekend over at U.S. Bank Stadium tomorrow. Minnesota and Iowa. They won't play at all in the Big Ten season, but they're meeting in the DQ Classic. So if you want to check out indoor baseball, now that might not be the greatest idea on a 60-degree day, but it is an option. And I don't know if they'll have the pivoting doors open, but you can see that Big Ten matchup, Gophers and Hawkeyes. By the way, if you want to give us a call, we do have some open phone lines at 651-989-9226 or 866-989-9226. Of our three teams right now, the three ones that are deeply into their season, Timberwolves trying to make a run for that final playoff spot in the West, the Wild right now on top in the West, and then the Gopher basketball team going to the tournament. Of those three, which one excites you the most, or is it all of them? Let us know. This is WCCO.
There are 5 times more hires made through Indeed.com than any other job site. Imagine a lottery that had 5 times more winners, a Sunday with 5 times more touchdowns. When you're hiring, it makes 5 times more sense to use Indeed. Right now, we're giving new users a $50 credit to post a sponsored job on the world's number one job site. Claim your $50 credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
There's something for every sports fan on CBSLocalSports.com. Watch live radio shows and original video programming while reading national articles from some of the best writers in the country. Visit CBSLocalSports.com today.
Want great deals on products and unique experiences in your neighborhood? Look no further than CBS Local Offers, which brings you the best local deals in your community with everything from enticing restaurants to exciting events. Go to offers.cbslocal.com today.
9 degrees, 651 Sports Saturday. Eric with you until 7:30. Then we're going to throw a bounce pass to John Folkey. Get the Timberwolves pregame show started. And then, of course, 8 o'clock tip-off from Texas, Minnesota, and San Antonio. Wolves are 25-36, Spurs 47-13. The Wolves won at Utah on Wednesday 107-80. They've won 4 of their last 5. The win in Salt Lake City was Minnesota's biggest victory margin ever against the Jazz. Karl Anthony Towns scored 21 points, had 15 rebounds. Andrew Wiggins, 20 points for Minnesota. Meanwhile, the Spurs, boy, remarkably consistent. Year in, year out, a championship contending team. They've got five titles in the Greg Popovich era. Spurs have won 9 straight against the Wolves, including 2 games this season. And remember, they don't have Tim Duncan anymore. The future Hall of Famer retired after last season, but they don't skip a beat. They've got Kawhi Leonard, one of the more underrated players, in my opinion, in the NBA. The Spurs, to me, they are the NBA's version of the New England Patriots. All you know is that they're going to be in the chase every season. They might not win it every year, but they're going to be in it. Spurs won over New Orleans last night, 101-98 in overtime in Louisiana. San Antonio has won 6 straight games and is only 2.5 games behind top seed Golden State in the NBA's Western Conference. So we all have, myself included, anointed the Warriors into the NBA Finals against the Cavaliers. Round 3, so to speak, sequel to the sequel to the sequel. Everybody says that's what it's going to be. They're on a collision course. But, J-Lo, we really would be foolish to count out the Spurs, and now you have the Kevin Durant injury.
That's what I was going to say.
So we can't sleep on San Antonio.
Now with Kevin Durant out and the fact that Harrison Barnes is not with Golden State anymore, Andrew Bogut is not with Golden State anymore, now Andrew Bogut's with Cleveland, the team has been made up in a different fashion this year, so and the Warriors have. So losing a piece like Durant, who really has been kind of their go-to this year, that's a big loss for them. So we'll see how it affects them over the next few weeks. We'll see if Durant has a chance to make it back by the playoffs or maybe slightly before. The Spurs have always been there. The Spurs have always been the contender. If you're not following basketball, then as much as I like the Warriors and I like how they play, the Spurs have always been a contender, and the Spurs play very well in great basketball as well. So they're in it. Houston, depending on how big James Harden can play in the playoffs,
yep,
they could be a factor. It's going to be interesting to see what Utah can do. Because Utah, they can present problems for most of these teams on the interior with Rudy Gobert, with Derek Favors.
Yeah, they have some length.
Yes, so I think San Antonio wouldn't be the greatest matchup for Utah, but Golden State maybe. Houston might be. Oklahoma City versus Utah, that would be an interesting series if it got to that point. But there are some matchup issues when you look at that matchup versus a couple of those top teams out west. So it's going to be interesting to see how the last few weeks of the season come together. But, yeah, San Antonio's always going to be a contender with Greg Popovich at the helm. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says.
No question. And he just reminds me so much of the way he runs his basketball program, very similar to Bill Belichick in the sense that he doesn't really care what he looks like on the sidelines. He's not trying to win awards for a GQ type suit that he has on or some sort of trendy look. But
Popovich at least has the he doesn't look like just an old curmudgeon all the time. He at least, in his bitter interviews and whatnot, the bitter attitude he comes across, you can at least tell there's some kind of playfulness there.
Yeah. And, it's funny. Earlier this season when the Spurs were here, I had a chance, really through Larry Fitzgerald, who has a relationship with Greg Popovich. He introduced me to him after the Spurs won here this season. And he could not have been more gracious and more down-to-earth and more friendly. And he was just counter to the image that is presented a lot about Greg Popovich. But no matter what you think of the guy, he's a winner. And the Spurs have limited the opposition to less than 100 points in 32 of their 60 games this season. They play D!